How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio, July 24, 2014, figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. What a day today, Dave.
Yeah, I know. It was a crazy day.
Let's start with some UFC news. The Nevada State Athletic Commission had their, they laid down the law on Chael Sonnen and Vitor Belfort today.
They didn't lay it down so hard on Vitor Belfort, did they?
No, they really didn't.
Chael, yes and no. I mean, they suspended a guy who was retired.
Yes,
but they didn't fine him. So you can kind of take that. You can take that many different ways. Vitor Belfort, I think it's pretty hard to take as anything but one way. Which is it was interesting because there's a new commissioner who was a former minor league baseball player. And he gave a really impassioned speech about, you know, being in baseball and losing job opportunities to guys who are juicing. And you know, it was a very hard-line speech. And I really thought when they were done that they were going to be a lot more hard-line on performance-enhancing drugs. And I think they will be than they've ever been before. I think that but having said that, I was you know, the Belfort thing, I'm kind of at a loss for the Belfort thing. I really I don't understand how that hearing went, in the sense that, you know, they asked him about his test, and he said that the test that he failed in February, and he said that, you know, of course, he was on TRT, and because he was traveling, you know, it usually takes two shots a week. Because he was traveling, he missed one of his shots, so he took essentially the equivalent of two shots in one shot, which was the day before the test, so his level was way up there. You know, I don't know about that one.
You know what's funny about that? Let me say something about that. As I would guess any doctor listening to this right now would tell you, I mean, forget TRT. If you have a medication that you're supposed to take every day, I am almost certain that on the label it says, if you forget to take a dose, you don't take double the dose. You just take the next dose the next day.
Yeah, that's how I always understood it, too. I mean, one of the things with that is that he really was far away from a fight, and he did have other tests. So it could have just been stupidity or naivete or whatever. However, you're still responsible. You know, one of the key things in this thing is, you know, you are still responsible for what you put into your body. And you get a TUE on TRT, you know, you have to be careful not to test over the limit. And he did. Now, if they'd gone in there and said, okay, you tested over the limit and we would suspend you for 9 months, and that's November, and you're not going to fight, and he agreed not to fight until December, and he would fight in Nevada, and he wasn't going to fight anywhere else until December, and so they all agreed to that, and he had his date for his match with Chris Weidman, which is December 6th. So it is roughly 10 months between the failed test and the fight. So if he was suspended and it was a first-time offense, very often the first-time offenses usually are in Nevada are 9 months. So that would be okay. The problem is it's a second-time offense. I also think that if you're on TRT, if anything, you should be scrutinized closer to make sure that you're not overdoing it. He did. They caught him, and there was no fine, which I guess they couldn't find him in this because he wasn't licensed at the time. But I would have been a lot more comfortable if they would have said, look, it's a little early to get a license. You've got a failed test. You know, apply again in February. And if they had done that, it would have been, you know, punishment in the sense of he's missing a big payday, huge payday, giant payday, you know, a main event on a pay-per-view, which right now is looking at, you know, with the card that they're trying to put together on that night, you know, we're talking about an 800,000 buy show, maybe more. And so his payday is going to be way into the seven figures, most likely, on that kind of a show. Maybe not because he's the challenger, not the champion, but he's still, if not, you know, still way into the six figures. So, I mean, he's getting a huge payday for this December 6th show. And, man, I just, I find it hard to wrap my head around the fact that he, you know, that they didn't bring up the first test, the history of Vitor Belfort, the fact that when he was suspended in Nevada the first time, he fought in England while he was under suspension, which, you know, he's not banned because at the time England wasn't regulated, so he could do it. But, but they reinstated him after he fought while under suspension. You know, this is many years ago. It's 7 years ago now. Still, I mean, there's a whole track record here, and I don't know. I think that it's like they need to be hard on this stuff. They really do. I mean, they're spending tons of money now on testing that they never spent before. So now they're kind of testing guys when they catch guys. You know, it's weird. They should, you know, I guess we're going to really see what happens with Vanderlei. Because Vanderlei is going to need to be, you know, put it this way. Chael took the test, and they were out there, essentially gave him a two-year suspension. Vanderlei ran from the test. If anything, he should be suspended for as long as the guy who took the test and failed, in my opinion.
Well, two things. First off, when is Vanderlei's deal?
Whenever he applies for a license.
I see.
I don't know when that will be.
I was under the impression that it was supposed to be like he was going to be, you know, they were going to discuss his deal today as well, but they didn't.
Theoretically, they were, but he didn't apply for a license yet. So until he applies for a license, there's no point in doing it. If he never applies for a license, they'll never do it. And with Vanderlei, who the hell knows with Vanderlei what he's thinking? So, yeah, I mean, I had, originally we all thought that Vanderlei would be on this docket, and he wasn't.
Okay. And the other thing is, it appears to me that the deal with Chael, the reason that they gave him 2 years was because he had so much stuff in his system. And granted, we don't know what Vanderlei did or did not have because he fled the test, which, to me...
But that's worse than testing positive, or at least the same.
It is. It's the same as testing positive, but are we going to assume he had five things in his system and thus he should get the same punishment as Chael?
I don't know. Well, Chael, Chael was being punished for being like a smart guy who was being completely stupid. I mean, essentially, because, you know, he can't fake his way through being like ignorant. You know what I mean?
He flat out said, I did it.
Well, yeah, because he's right now the strategy is like, you know, admit everything, don't fight it, and look like look like you're taking your punishment like a man, and that way it'll be quicker before you get rehired as a commentator. I mean, that's the game that he was playing.
Sure.
Now Chael, the thing with Chael is okay, Chael is probably never going to fight again, and I think that no matter what happened here, the odds were probably wasn't. Now I would say the odds are extremely good that he's not. I mean, you never know because, again, in 2 years, he can get reinstated. There probably is money in a Chael Sonnen return fight just because he can talk up a fight, even though he'll be, 39 years old by then and out of commission for a couple of years. And this fighting is a lot harder on, as far as the aging process generally is harder on wrestlers. On guys who are primarily wrestlers. If you're a wrestler who can strike, that's not the same thing, because if you can strike good like a Dan Henderson, as long as you can keep, you use your wrestling to keep your balance and you have the striking, you can have the longevity. But when your primary thing is the ability to take people down, that declines with age. Chael's strengths, are going to be, far lesser in a couple of years no matter what. Because of the age. The thing that he was worried about is that they could have fined him up to $250,000. And now he's a guy who essentially has no job. I'm sure he saved money, but still he has no job and he could have been fined a lot. And he was not fined anything at all, other than the fact that he has to, pay for the tests that he failed and pay for, Dr. Eichner, who they flew in for this hearing. So essentially, you know, that's a flight in from, I think it's Utah and back, and maybe a day in a hotel, you know, paying for some tests. So, you know, you're talking about a couple of grand, maybe. I mean, it'll probably end up being over $1,000, maybe, you know. But when you're worried about, you know, being fined $100,000 or some number like that, and you're not fined anything, you're just suspended. I'm not saying he got off scot-free, because 2-year suspension is almost career ending. And one of the one commissioner, the new commissioner, I mean, he wanted a lifetime ban. I mean, he absolutely said a lifetime ban. And then he was, I think that if it wasn't for him, they might have gone with a 1-year, but he said, you know, he wanted a lifetime ban. So by the time the discussion was done, they'd kind of compromised on a 2-year suspension. So the question becomes with the 2-year, because it's a matter of time before Fox and UFC want him back as an announcer. That's not even a question. Everyone knows that. It's just a question of like how long before they feel it's time. And even WWE has had interest in him as an announcer. And again, it's a question, you know, this is not the time you can make that move, because it's, you know, how do you explain it, right? You know, you look bad hiring him right now. So he's trying to cut that time down. If he was suspended for 1 year, after a year, nobody would have any qualms of hiring him. This suspension does not preclude him announcing, but companies that may want to hire him as an announcer, they could be spooked with the idea that, well, this guy's still on suspension in Nevada, so maybe it doesn't look good for us to hire him just yet. So it may or may not lengthen the time before he gets asked back. So, I mean, he's punished. I'm not saying his punishment is too light or anything like that. He was punished. And, you know, he didn't go and do like some guys would have done in this situation. Like a lot of guys would have done in this situation, just challenge the validity of the growth hormone test, because a lot of people think that you can challenge that and it would not hold up. But he didn't do that. And he would still have the EPO test. So, you know, essentially the growth hormone and the EPO is what absolutely killed him, because there's no question that he was, you know, cheating the rules. I mean, the other drugs were banned. He was stupid for not asking for a TUE for those drugs. You know, I mean, I don't know how he didn't, but he didn't. And because of that, he needed to be suspended, because, you know, you got to ask. But at the same time, these were not performance-enhancing drugs. These were drugs trying to get him, get his testosterone level back to, not even back to normal, back to a reasonably unhealthy low levels, as opposed to seriously unhealthy low levels. But there's no excuse for the other two drugs whatsoever. And, you know, they called him on the carpet, the fact that he went to 3 different doctors for these drugs. It wasn't like one doctor prescribed them, although he did have prescriptions for everything. But
he actually almost got himself a job, essentially.
Well, no, what happened was they asked him to turn state's evidence, essentially, in this, where it was just like, look, we know, you know what's going on, so help us, you know, help us close loopholes, advise us on how to make this drug policy more stringent and more effective.
Sure.
And also, I mean, the funny thing is like, of all the people to ask, you ask the one guy who failed for growth hormone, you know what I mean, who clearly doesn't know how to beat the test, that's supposed to be so easy to beat, on close the loopholes. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, if he knew how to close the loopholes, he'd never been caught in the first place.
Well, I'm sure his advice will be, test, essentially.
Well, look, they're going to be doing a lot more testing. Okay, we're going to have a lot more testing out of competition. There's no doubt. I mean, it was, if you watch that hearing, these guys are going to be a lot more vigilant, and they're not going to be the only commission, because UFC is going to be earmarking money for different commissions and giving the commissions money to test, when they go to those states. So there's going to be, you know, the testing will be better. Will it be as good as it needs to be? Time will tell. I don't know the answer to that one. It won't be as good as maybe I would like it to be, but it'll be better than it has been. But, you know, you need to have, you can't have this thing where, well, you know, this guy's going to be in a main event in our state, and, you know, you know, he made a mistake. We'll let him fight. I was very uncomfortable with the way that ruling went down, without, you know, even, I, you know, especially being Vitor and everything. I was disappointed in that one. And then, you know, you know, some people go, well, look at a double standard. You know, Vitor got nothing. Chael got 2 years. Well, every case is different. I didn't expect Vitor to get as long as Chael. I don't know how he's, you know, I just wish it wasn't like that, put it that way. I think Vitor got off too easy. I think Chael, look, if it's going to end Chael's career, and the fact is that he lost both of his jobs as well because of it, he didn't get off scot-free. He could have been worse. I don't have a problem with what happened to Chael at all, the way it all went down, at all. So that's fine. But Vitor, I got a tough time with.
Given Vitor's history, I mean, it is... I mean, some people will argue that since he cannot fight until December, he's essentially kind of sort of getting a 9-month suspension.
Yeah, but he is.
But it's a different situation, because this is not like a guy who never failed a test before and all of a sudden he failed a test here. His story is somewhat ludicrous. This is hardly the first instance of this happening. I think at the end of the day, it's... I mean, yeah... You can say what you want about it, but you know what? They're going to test this guy all the time.
They're going to test him all the time, and he did have to get off TUE, you know, TRT, and he is being tested all the time in the sense of they're not finding, you know, clomiphene and HCG in his system. So he admitted he went through a crash, and when they asked him about his training, you know, and again. I don't think he's going to be the same fighter because number one, he went through the crash, which, and his levels were low. The other one is that, you know, he, when they asked him about his training, like I said, he said he has to train differently. So he's not able to train the way he did when he was on TRT. So he's probably, given his age, by the time this fight with, Chris Weidman takes place, Vitor will have passed his 38th birthday. And he's going to be, again, I don't know if he's going to be clean. I know that they're going to test the hell out of him. And, you know, at 38 clean on a guy who has probably not been clean a lot for the bulk of his successful career, I don't like his chances in that fight. I mean, he is a skilled fighter. He does, you know, but he's going to feel his age now. Which, you know, the one thing about what he was doing was it masked his age probably a decent amount, which is why it was, you know, it never should have been allowed. And he is the guy who got the thing thrown out. If it wasn't for Vitor, they might have, you know, Chael may have still been around. Although I guess if he had, if they would have got him with a growth hormone, he wouldn't have still been around.
Well, one other thing too, I it's hard. I mean, I'm sure Chael can go to the commission and he can explain to them that, okay, this is how you caught me. This is what I did. This was the timing and everything like that.
But that doesn't really
help them. Let's say that Vitor is on growth hormone.
Yeah.
I mean, does it really help them to know when they caught Chael? Because they have no way of knowing if Vitor were going to take a shot, when that would be. So, I mean, it's great that they caught a guy on growth hormone, but... I mean, do you honestly think that they're going to catch a lot of guys on growth hormone going forward in the future with this testing?
Well, how many guys in the United States have ever been caught on growth hormone in any sport?
Exactly.
Is it one?
And it
might be two.
The EPO, I mean, maybe you'll catch some people, but it's just sort of like, it's great they're doing the testing, but it's still, doing the testing doesn't, you know, it doesn't eliminate the fact that it's very, very hard to actually pop someone for this. The timing has to be perfect.
It's almost impossible. I guess that they may have gone, you know, one of the things that, again, and they're not sophisticated enough to know this, unfortunately, but one of the things, again, you know, and they're going to, you know, like I said, they're going to test Vitor hard for the rest of his career, and that's good. I think one of the things that they should have told him is, dude, you know what? We're going to let you know something. You're going to be tested at 2 a.m. You're going to be tested at 4 a.m. You're going to be tested at 11 p.m. It ain't going to be one of those things where
don't tell him, just do it.
No, just no. Tell him that to get your license, you have to agree to not only be tested, but we can come. You got to tell us where you are, which he has to do every day. Okay, not every day, 24 hours a day, because if it's every day, you go take your shot at 11. We're not going to test you till 9, 10 in the morning at the earliest. You're okay. No, we may show up in the middle of the night on your door and tell him, dude, we may show up because if you're going to, if there's anything that's going to be a deterrent to growth hormone and EPO, is telling a guy that we want you to know that if we show up at 2 a.m. and for a blood test, we're waking you up. You're coming to the door and you're getting the blood test at 2 a.m. You're not going, well, okay, I'll show up in the morning at 9 a.m. And they didn't do that because they're not sophisticated enough to know to do that. But if they would have said that, I would have, I'd have felt a whole lot better.
Well, maybe they will be sophisticated enough and don't tell the guy, just do it. Just show up and do it.
In time, they're going to be because they've got the one new commissioner who's reading up on it hard, and he's going to figure it out. They're going to learn. It's unfortunate that, again, they're so far, they're having to play catch up, big catch up. And by the time they catch up to this, who knows what's, how it'll change again. But, so we got, Chris Weidman is going to fight Vitor Belfort. The commission's hearing, they announce that he's got a license and literally within minutes, I get a press release announcing Chris Weidman and Vitor Belfort for December 6th at Mandalay Bay. And they are looking at loading this thing up, as like this giant show. Anthony Pettis was told that he's fighting Benson Henderson on that day. So that's two championship matches. They talked about Gina Carano and Ronda Rousey. Now, when they had brought up the date, that was going to be December 6th. It may, that almost feels like overkill. So that one could be moved to January the 3rd. That fight is not signed. The word on the street is that negotiations are going very good. The reality is that it's better than that. I don't know that it's signed on a piece of paper, but the understanding is that it's happening. They've agreed to terms. I think it has to do with she has a movie and they just have to work out certain things about the dates of her shooting the movie and make sure that, that's done with enough time for her to get in, full training and just work those dates around and everything. But she's essentially agreed to the fight.
It's kind of surprising in the sense that one of the things that people have been talking about is she is a Hollywood star. She's an action star. And so the idea that she may be going into a real fight with Ronda Rousey that she could very easily and perhaps likely will lose decisively in one round. I mean,
I think there's a real good chance of that.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising that they're jumping at this opportunity. I would think that they would.
It's a big money fight. Look, it's a big money fight, and being involved in a big fight, the loser of a big fight often prospers. I mean, look, Gina Carano got her gig because she was in a big fight with Cyborg where she got beat. So I don't know that her losing. Look, again, if she was never in the fight with Cyborg, she's never, no one notices her for movies in the first place. It's because she was in that big fight that got so much publicity and Steve Soderbergh, was watching and saw, that. Hey, look, this girl's got freaking charisma. I think I can do something with her. So, Joe Frazier, lost the thrill in Manila. His legacy was helped by that fight, by just being in that big of a fight. And it's not always the case. And you never know how things are going to play out. But, being the loser of the biggest women's fight in history probably isn't the worst thing for you.
Also, we supposedly had a date, a venue, the whole nine yards for the Jones Gustafson 2 show. And literally moments later, Gustafson out with an injury.
Yeah, torn meniscus, Daniel Cormier in. Cormier got called or texted. He got a text message at 6:45 a.m. from Lorenzo Fertitta asking him if he wanted to take the fight, and he said yes. Not having knee surgery. Remember, he was going to have knee surgery right after the wrestling match on July the 5th.
That's right.
And so he's not going to have that, and says it's... So there you go. It's a... Look, it's in some ways, I think it's a bigger fight. I think at the end, it may not be a bigger fight today, but I think that come the last week or so before the fight, it'll be a much bigger fight because Cormier is going to promote it. He's not a dummy. He knows how to promote
it. He's already promoting it.
Yeah, he's claimed that somehow John Jones has the ability to direct message him, even though he doesn't follow John Jones, and he doesn't know how this is possible.
I know how it's possible.
But in fact, it happened. How is it possible?
Because apparently, if you've got a verified account, anybody can direct message you, even if they if you are not following each other.
How come there's people I can't direct message?
They may not have verified accounts.
You would think that they would.
Well, if it has to have a special check mark next to it to know if it's verified. But
okay.
So anyway, I believe that is the answer.
So Cormier, would Cormier have a verified account or John Jones?
Well, who texted who? Who tweeted who?
John Jones texted Cormier.
Okay, well, let's find out. Daniel Cormier's Twitter.
It's DC MMA type of thing.
Yep, he is verified. So okay. Anybody can message him.
Oh, okay. There you go.
So that fight is that's the deal there.
So if you see Daniel Cormier tomorrow, you can tell him that in fact he does not have special powers. That John Jones doesn't have special powers because Cormier was thinking that he did.
Well, maybe this is what I was told. I could be wrong, but I'm sure we'll have an answer tomorrow. But supposedly, if you have a verified account, anybody can DM you. So I guess. That's a story. Maybe you both have to have a verified account. Anyway, that's the story. But
okay,
so they're fighting, and it should be exciting.
Yeah, that's going to be a great show. That's going to be Conor McGregor is going to fight Dustin Poirier. Dominic Cruz is fighting Tegui Mizugaki. Kat Zingano is going to fight Amanda Nunes. Kat Zingano, of course, is going to be a great story. Kat Zingano's comeback, and. I don't know if you know this or not, but did you know who Kat Zingano's jiu-jitsu coach is?
Who her jiu-jitsu coach is?
Yes.
No.
It's Ronda Rousey's ex-boyfriend.
Oh, wow.
And ex-jiu-jitsu coach.
How about that?
Yes. So if, in fact, she wins, that will become an interesting story for their fight, if they have, you know, which would probably take place sometime next year.
I am, in fact, more excited for this Cormier fight than this Gustafson 2. Even though that was a great fight, I really want to see Cormier and John Jones.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's Cormier's a competitor. And Cormier's, you know, the one guy who might be able to throw John Jones around as a wrestler. And he's never been in with somebody like that. I don't know that he can, but he's thrown everybody else around and bigger guys than John Jones and, you know, guys who can wrestle. So he's a really good, you know, Cormier's really quick. He's a really good striker. He's got the same problem with John Jones that everyone has with that, you know, with that Gustafson didn't have is the reach issue. You know, Gustafson was the one guy who, you know, had, as far as the reach went, you know, he was in the same ballpark with John Jones, and he was very competitive with John Jones in that fight. Cormier is going to have, you know, the reach disadvantage. So that's going to be some part of the game that a mystery that Cormier is going to have to solve if he wants to win the fight. But I don't see it's going to be a tough fight. I think that this will be a really tough fight for both guys. I'm very much looking forward to that show. I mean, the McGregor Poirier fight's going to be great. Dominic Cruz coming back is a story. It'll be almost 3 years, and Zingano coming back is a story. And there's plenty of other stuff on that show. So UFC actually, you know, the December 6th show and this show, and between that we've got a Brazil show with, that'll probably be with Mendez and Aldo, which, you know, is turning into a big grudge, and the Mexico show. So they're going to have a lot of big events between now and the end of the year. They're talking about, I guess that they're opening their minds to the idea of doing a stadium show in Dublin after all, after Dana kept saying that he would not do it. I guess that they are coming to the conclusion that, you know what, I mean, this guy, that, you know, they got these Irish fighters that are so over in Ireland, and they got these crazy Irish fans, and there's a 80,000-seat stadium, and there's a 52,000-seat stadium in Dublin, both of them, and maybe they'll go to that smaller, you know, the smaller of the two stadiums, because it, you know, I mean, it does elevate the sport, and it gets you a lot of publicity if you go into a country and you're drawing 50,000 fans, and may help them as far as getting TV deals in Ireland. I don't know how much a sellout in Ireland helps the UK market. They are different markets, you know, even though geographically they're not far apart. So I don't, you know, I don't know exactly how that all works. I know that the Ireland show did not air on major TV in the UK. It was on BT, but they're always on BT anyway. But they weren't on Channel 5, which, you know, it's too bad, because that would have been an incredible show to have on Channel 5 in the UK, but it didn't happen.
Better hope Poirier doesn't win then.
Yeah. Well, it's gonna, you know, he's gonna be tested every time out, and Poirier is the next test up, and you know, if he can't pass that test, then that's that. But that was gonna be that anyway. Look, if the guy can't fight it at a top five level, it wasn't going to last. And I don't know, you know, he's looked good. He looked really good in his last fight. So I don't know that you know, he's out of his league with Poirier, whether he can win. I mean, it's the right test.
So how was G1 night two?
I haven't watched the whole show yet. Wasn't as good as night one, but every match I saw, I didn't particularly like Shelton Benjamin, Bad Luck Fale, even though the crowd was into it, and the match was okay, but every other match was good so far that I've seen. So it's the one thing is that Ishii, after seeing, I don't know how this guy's gonna make it. He, you know, he sells his neck like nobody's business, and I know it's selling, but he got dropped on his head on the apron on a long DDT, not a short DDT, that I just watched, and I mean, it was straight down on the top of his head, and it was like, why are you doing this? And then he took another one in the ring, which is a little bit safer than the first one, but it was still right on the top of his head. And, you know, when I'm watching him, and he's so good at selling that you don't know, like, what's real and what's not real, and that's to his credit. But he's still, like, grabbing his arms and, you know, doing the stuff with the fingers and all that stuff where, you know, it's like either he's, like, the most brilliant seller. Well, he is. But I'm still worried about this guy losing feeling on the right side of his body the way he was selling, and the fact that he just moves like a guy with, you know, you can see his neck is so freaking stiff to begin with. I think if they ever did an MRI of that guy's neck, it would be very, very scary. And we're only 2 days in, and I don't know about him. He just looked hurt in the first night and had a hell of a match. And actually had a hell of a match with Kojima the second night as well. I'm worried about him. And I probably should be worried about a lot of guys when, you know, Tenzon. Although Tenzon, you know, aside from the knee and the fact that he doesn't look like he's been able to train that hard, which I'm sure he hasn't been able to with all of his injuries, Tenzon has looked good in his two matches. I mean, by the standards of compared to last year where, you know, it was just like you were feeling really bad he was even in it. This year, it's kind of like there's a story with him in it, and he's playing the role, you know, I mean. Him and Tomoaki Honma, as far as guys that aren't going to win but are playing a certain role in this tournament, they've both been very good. And Honma actually has been great so far. So, G1's strong. I mean, the second night was, from what I've seen, I got a couple matches left, but But, I mean, certainly a good show. Yeah.
All right. Let's look at these SmackDown spoilers here. So what the hell is going on with Rusev and Swagger now?
I watched Tuesday, and it looked to me like they were building to a flag match between the two of them. They were going to do Sheamus, obviously, and Rusev, and shoot an angle there for a U.S. title thing. And Sheamus was ill, had the flu, so he missed all the TVs. And I don't know how serious it is, but it's probably pretty damn serious because wrestlers don't miss television bookings for minor cases of the flu. So he was probably, he had to have been sick as a dog to not work, especially the second night when he was advertised for the main event. So, and the fact that it had to do with his SummerSlam match. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll probably have a better idea next week, but nothing was announced, but from watching the TV, it felt like when they were both waving the flag at the end that you're building to some kind of a flag match situation at SummerSlam. But nothing's been announced yet.
So for the dark match, we had Adrian Neville beating Tyler Breeze to retain the NXT title. So Tyler Breeze makes a main roster date here.
No. In dark match. But they're in Orlando. I mean, that's not a surprise.
SmackDown, the Usos beat Ryback non-title when the Usos did the old switcheroo and the Axel got pinned with an inside cradle. So the babyfaces doing the old switcheroo gimmick here. We had Miz TV. Miz gave an acceptance speech for winning the Battle Royal. For everybody who is eagerly awaiting the return to television of the Miz's father, you got it here tonight. They interviewed his mom as well. She said her favorite superstar was Roman Reigns. He was thanking Maurice, his pets, and so-and-so, his face. When Bo Dallas came out to a big pop, he said that Miz won the Battle Royal because he believed, which begs the question, did Bo Dallas not believe? Because he did not win that Battle Royal. So Ziggler came out, said Bo and Miz were alike, they're both full of crap, and so they ended up with a brawl. Bo jumped Dolph, and that set up a match later on with Bo beating him with a roll-up after Miz tried to interfere while doing commentary. And then Dolph laid out Bo during his victory lap. Miz laid out Ziggler. Obviously, they're leading to a three-way. Otherwise, this makes absolutely no sense to have Ziggler beat Miz on Monday and then Bo Dallas beat Ziggler here. So, I guess three-way at SummerSlam?
It looks that way, yeah. Yeah, I haven't heard for sure on that one. But that's what it... you would... Because if you weren't going to do that... I don't think that you would have had Bo Dallas get his hand raised. You know, you would have had, then again, they are trying to keep that win streak thing going. So maybe, obviously they're doing Ziggler with Miz as a part of the Intercontinental title picture. And Bo probably is, if they're going to do a three-way with Bo, yeah.
And by the way, everyone's favorite finish, the interference finish.
Well, look, on Friday, if you like that finish, then you need to watch the show Friday because I believe that it was every finish was like a inside cradle and almost all with interference.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So we had Dean Ambrose beating Cesaro in a no DQ match. So this feud must continue. Seth came out at one point. Ambrose clotheslined him into the timekeeper area. And finally, he won with an inside cradle. That is the third in a row on this show after interference, I guess, by Rollins. Rollins and Cesaro left Ambrose laying with a neutralizer and a curb stomp. So, there you go. Dean Ambrose beats Cesaro. We had, Paige beating Naomi 30 seconds. Paige said she was friends with AJ, did the skip down to the ring. Cameron's music hit. Naomi was distracted and she got cradle DDT and the PTO. And then Cameron laid out Naomi after the match. So yes, they did the match and now they're shooting angles for the match they already did prior to the pay-per-view.
They're going to do it again.
Sure. Goldust and Stardust. More of that goofiness. We had Bray Wyatt beating Truth with the sister Abigail. And then Bray asked Jericho where he was when Truth needed him afterwards.
He was in L.A.
I presume this leads to Truth joining this New Nation group or whatever they're going to call it.
Wouldn't surprise me.
They announced Monday it was going to be John Cena's reaction to Brock at SummerSlam and the return after missing no Raws of Stephanie McMahon. She's back on Monday.
Well, she bailed. She got bailed out at 4 a.m.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Did you see the storyline that Hunter did not arrive until 1 a.m., 2 hours after Raw went off the air?
He probably had to go out to dinner.
It's very important to get, for camaraderie. You eat dinner with the boys afterwards before you go bail out your wife from jail.
Yeah, well, good. I like the idea that they went and said that right away. So, when they go and start a fight. I put it this way. If they come back and next week they don't have like a big fight over it, I'm going to be really upset.
Yes.
Because they need a marriage quarrel, but I don't want too much of one, because usually those marriage quarrels on those fake marriage quarrels in wrestling, the history of those aren't very good.
No, Hunter's not stupid enough to let it go too far.
I don't think so. I mean, he nixed the fake Kurt Angle thing.
Yeah.
And he nixed the Eric Bischoff thing, and like that. Remember that they did that angle with Stephanie and Eric Bischoff, and then the next day at the creative meeting, it was like, just so everyone knows, that never happened, will never be referred to again, and there are no angles coming from this ever again.
Yes.
I mean, it was just like, I was thinking like, wow, Stephanie and Eric teaming up against Vince, what a great angle. And then I find out that the creative meeting, it's like, not only are they not going to do this, but in fact, what you saw that night never happened. So, yeah, he's pretty good at that.
You know what? I'd rather it went that way than what they did for the Kurt Angle, Stephanie, Triple H love triangle, which was build up a fantastic fucking angle and then kill it dead.
Yeah, I know.
I was very upset with that, but...
What about the angle of Stephanie and Eric teaming up against Vince? That's a great angle.
It's a great angle, too, but at least they killed it off before they built up a great angle and then didn't deliver.
Yeah, but it's like the potential.
Well, sure, the potential was there, but the potential was there with that three-way angle, too, and it was made worse by the fact that they teased us with it for weeks and months, and then the payoff was just she went with the other guy.
Yeah, I know.
God, that sucked.
Yeah, did you ever hear the explanation of why?
Because, what was it, like it's what made sense or something like that?
No, if it was made sense, it would have gone the other way.
No, but I mean the argument that why would she go with Angle when she could go with Hunter?
Basically, yeah. Why would a guy go with Kurt Angle when she could go with Hunter?
Yeah.
It's like
that's your explanation.
That's your explanation, yeah. Yeah, what a, you know. I mean, I loved, they did the one thing when they wanted Kurt to beat Triple H for the world title, and Triple H is like, no one's going to believe it because of the size difference. It's like, dude, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think
that's what happens when a man doesn't watch mixed martial arts.
It's when a guy's never been in a freaking real sport.
Yeah. Especially wrestling.
You know, I mean, he's, only competed in freaking bodybuilding contests.
And finally here, we had Triple H. Oh, yeah, he was Mr. Teen.
He wasn't Miss nothing. He was Mr. Teenage New Hampshire.
That's right, Mr. Teenage New Hampshire.
When he was like 19 years old.
That's right. I was confused because Charmel was just on the show. I thought he might have been Miss Black America. She had been.
She was, yeah, that's right, she was.
Yeah.
What, are you going to ask him if he was a backup singer for James Brown as well?
Hey, a dancer.
Dancer,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think he was. Roman Reigns beat Alberto Del Rio with a spear in a decent match, it says here. This Roman's gotta up the work rate.
I guess. Time will tell.
I just the standards are too high. And I think
the standards are pretty high, but some guys are able to fake their way, or I don't want to say fake their way through. It's like there are guys who aren't good workers that can get by with it, and there are guys that are good workers that people think are bad workers. So it's like, you never know.
What the people want is a great quality of match. Like John Cena, I mean, his punches suck. I mean, he's got tons of physical limitations, but he has great matches.
He has good matches. Not always, but he has good matches. But, he's got parts of his game that are not good, but he always works hard.
Yeah.
And in the clutch, you know, more often than not, he's going to deliver a really good match.
Well, that's where Roman needs to get, because
yeah, but if he get, but you know, again, when they were chanting "You can't wrestle" in that four way, they weren't chanting at Roman Reigns; they were chanting at John Cena.
Yes, yes, but I just I don't know. It just like I said, the stare down they did, and then when they started fighting, it was just a disappointment. And then on Monday on Raw, when they did that three way, it was just like it was such a boring, basic, nothing happening match.
Yeah, and you can't do those
when you're going to be the top guy.
Yeah, I was thinking when I'm watching that, you know, I mean, and they put it on first so the crowd would be fresher, and they still didn't really go crazy for it. And, you know, you have your two of your top heels in a handicap match against the babyface. I mean, it's like, okay, we're giving you easy sympathy, right? So all you got to do is sell and make a comeback. And that's what he did, and somehow the crowd, you know, like the crowd, I think that, you know, it's going to be a learning curve here, because what the crowd wants, because of what they've gotten for so long from Roman Reigns, is they want the guy to stand on the apron and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait, hot tag, do a Superman punch, do a spear, and that's about it. That's what they want out of him. And in a singles match, it's a completely different dynamic. And, you know, I mean, look, they're giving him long matches on the road. He's worked long matches with Bray Wyatt. He's worked long matches with Randy Orton. They're going to be doing that for months. And he's, you know, the guy's a good athlete. The guy has a great look. You know, hopefully he will improve by the time it's time, and he'll be ready at that point. And if he's not, then, well, we'll see what happens.
So tell me about this this Dragon Gate show.
Yeah, okay, that's the Saturday Dragon Gate show. Saturday night show, yeah. I think, let me see what day it was. Saturday night. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as good as the New Japan show. It blew away Battleground. But there was one match. It was Akira Tozawa and Shingo Takagi against T-Hawk and Ita, which was their tag team championship match. That match was freaking phenomenal. T-Hawk, this guy is going to be like one of the best guys, and he probably already is one of the best guys in the business. This guy is so freaking great. I mean, I've been watching him for a while now, but he's improving. He's got the poise. God damn. I mean, he was on a show with Ricochet. He was on a show with Masato Yoshino, with Shingo, Takagi, Akira Tozawa. I mean, these are awesome wrestlers. And I thought he stood out more than almost anyone. I mean, Ricochet is special and all. And Ricochet wasn't in, but he had a better match than Ricochet by far. So, that match is worth going out of your way to see. It's one of the best matches of the year. Main event, you know, I would say the last five matches were really good, every single one of them. I know some people expected like Dragon Kid and Flamita. I think that, you know, again, I mean, I expected a great match, and I thought I got a pretty damn great match. But a lot of people, I think, wanted it like to be some like match of the year. It was not a match of the year, but there was some incredible stuff in that match. That match was, you know, very good. The BB Hulk, and he won the Open the Dreamgate title from Yamato. Yamato's a good worker. BB Hulk is, you know, he's got a good look, and it was, I guess, I don't think he's one of the best workers in Dragon Gate. Although they did a 32-minute match, it was pretty damn good. I like the show a lot, so. But I think that coming the same weekend as that first G1, people like compared the two of them, and the Dragon Gate didn't quite measure up to that. Although I did feel that tag match was better than any match on the of any match on the first night of G1.
All right, let's do some questions here. Everybody is well aware that the listed payouts for UFC are not the real payouts, in terms that there are a lot of bonuses. But Hugh says, I was astonished that Weidman was listed as being paid nearly four times that of Ronda Rousey. He says, I know there will be bonuses and such, but as a base payment, Ronda seems pretty undervalued at $120,000. Is it the case that Weidman structured his deal to have a larger guarantee while Ronda gets a much bigger pay-per-view cut? He's just basically asking why the discrepancy.
I don't know why there's a listed discrepancy. I can't answer that. I know what Ronda's deal is, and it's a lot more than $400,000, not even including the pay-per-view cut. So it's not, you know, they may have worked something out to where, you know, sometimes guys will get like a giant bonus up front and then less per show. And other guys will, you know, again, you'll have different things. And again, and you also, like Ronda is guaranteed that her fights are on pay-per-view and she gets a bonus on those pay-per-views, and the bonus may kick in at a certain number that's lower. I don't know. It's just how they structure the deal. It's just how, you know, there's just a lot of different aspects. But I don't know if you saw the New Yorker article, but from reading that article, and that article was excellent, you get the impression that she's making really good money. Well, I know she's making really good money, but she's thinks maybe she could be making more, which I guess everyone does. I just sort of felt that. And there's also, you know, with the UFC thing, one of the things with UFC with Ronda also is that if you look at her, she's either sponsored by UFC or Zions, which means that they're paying her in that way as well. And I don't know what, you know, again, that number, what they're paying her for that, I don't know. I do know what other people were paying her that, you know, sponsors that she no longer has, what they were paying her. And it was a lot of money. So she's making a lot of money on the sponsorship. She's doing real well. She's doing better. I mean, I don't know everything that Weidman's getting either, but I'm pretty darn sure she's doing better than Weidman.
This person says, how do you think AJ Styles is going to hold up throughout the tournament? Has he ever had a stretch of matches like this in his career? He says, 3-day TNA TV tapings at a theme park in sunny Florida don't seem too difficult physically, he says. I'm sure the mental trauma is immeasurable compared to the high expectations this tournament brings.
Yeah, and AJ's 37 years old, too. We'll see. I mean, it's only 2 days in. All I know is everyone said he had the best match with Toriano, and I haven't seen that match yet, but everyone said he's the best match with Toriano that Toriano's had in years. So he's obviously working hard, and that first night he sure worked hard. He's only got one gear. It's like I think that he's like Kurt in a sense. I mean, Kurt had to learn not to, and now, you know, Kurt can't because he physically just can't, but AJ still can. So it's going to be a tough deal for everyone. You don't know how well your body's going to hold up until you do it, but I don't think anyone's getting through this thing unscathed.
All right. This person here says, what qualifies someone to be on the Nevada State Athletic Commission? Watching the commission meeting today, I found it astonishing how ignorant many of the commissioners are about the drugs they ban and how the athletes they regulate use them. It seemed pathetic that one of them asked Chael if he could assist them in the future. Shouldn't these guys be the experts if they're there to protect the fighters?
Well, that's something that's just something that they always do when in those situations. They are better. I mean, 2 years ago, it was a lot worse than it is now. And California as well. I mean, I remember in the California Commission when Chael had his deal, his first hearing, and there was only one. There was, you know, the doctor. He knew what was going on, and nobody else. One guy wanted to know and kind of did, and the rest of them just didn't know. So, I mean, as far as how they get there, they're political appointees. You know the right person, and that's the deal.
This is actually it's kind of a hell of an idea, but they'd screwed up. So he says, I was thinking about the possible merger of the U.S. and Intercontinental titles and wanted to know what you thought of a modern version of the television title called the network title, where it is only defended on the WWE network.
There's nothing wrong with it. you know.
I just see him putting it on some geek, booking it poorly, and then can't figure out why no one buys the network to see it defended.
I think that you're probably right. Look at TNA with the TV title. I mean, like, they go, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we're going to have that. I remember when they did that thing where, you know, D-Von was going to defend it every single week, and then they just forgot. And then they just, now they don't even have a TV title. So, there's nothing wrong with the idea if you want to do it right, but you're right. I would bet that it would probably be done right for a couple of weeks, and then it would just kind of die a very slow and crumbling death.
Alrighty. If Brock is going to win the title at SummerSlam, has there been any confirmed negotiations on him working more matches in his contract? If he does agree to do that, would the locker room have a large, small, or no resentment for him being paid more while the company cuts back a lot and probably lowering other wrestlers' payoffs? Considering the network is replacing pay-per-view income, it seems counterproductive to hire a guy each year now going forward whose salary equals that of over 41,000 paid annual subscribers. Do you believe Brock is still worth that much, either directly or indirectly?
It's hard to make the math work. So he probably isn't. As far as changes in schedule, I have not heard any changes in schedule. He's working the September show, and I know that. But aside from that, I haven't heard anything. As far as, look, guys resented Dwayne Johnson, and even when he freaking drew, you still had guys resenting Dwayne Johnson. If they resented Dwayne Johnson, they're going to resent Brock no matter what. Especially if he gets the championship, you're gonna have that. The one thing about Brock compared to Dwayne Johnson is that Dwayne probably, I don't want to say didn't care, but probably was, you know, again, he probably thought, you know, these guys are so stupid. You know why? You know, if they're really complaining, whereas Brock, I know doesn't care. You know what I mean? Everyone in that company could resent him, and you know, it's not going to be any skin off his nose.
Now, this person here says, if Kurt Angle had signed with WCW in 1998 instead of the WWF, how do you think his career would have turned out?
Differently. You know, you can't ever answer those questions, but. I would say that the Vultures would have gotten him easily.
Yes.
They'd have gotten Rock too if Rock would have signed there. They'd have killed him. It's just how it was. You had a lot of guys that were there to protect their spots, and I get it. But you didn't have management that saw through it, or if they did, they didn't. They didn't have the foresight because that company crumbled because they didn't make new stars. Other than Bill Goldberg, and you know, they got him too.
All right, this person here says, obviously they won't touch him until things cool down, but how much value do you think Chael Sonnen would bring to the WWE for the network? In a one-off match scenario, I think he'd be able to draw a good number of lapsed WWE fans and moved on to UFC. If his price tag was $250,000, WWE's break-even would be around 5,000 to 6,000 new subscribers, which seems attainable.
It's hard to say. Until you see him in the thing, I mean, it's the thing with Chael is I think that everyone kind of realizes, or they're of the opinion that it's too late for Chael as a wrestler. Because of, again, people expect a certain level. And it takes a lot of years to do that. And they're just not going to train a guy who's 38, 39 years old. Even one with a gift of gab like Chael. So I don't rule out the idea it could happen, but I think the odds are against it.
All righty. How come UFC referee Keith Peterson always wears a long sleeve shirt that covers his arms? No other referee does that. Does he perhaps have some unsuitable tattoos?
I don't know.
All right. One more here. Two more. Who do you think will be the next female inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame?
I mean, it's, you know, whoever they like on that day is the correct answer.
We haven't heard any names.
Mickey James and Tara, if they want to do something. I mean, you know, and they're both, you know, Tara is definitely on, has gone back on good terms with them. But as far as would they mean anything marquee wise, she was, you know, as Victoria, probably not. So if they found somebody better, they would probably get the nod ahead of her. But it's not like any of the women from the other from any other era would mean anything marketability wise. So I don't know. I mean, what it's. I mean, who's not in that should be in? There's probably. I mean, I think that you know, they would probably be the two best bets, I guess. But I don't know that. Kind of weird. I gotta say something. This reminded me of something. Even though you know, Jim Ross's contract expired, I guess today.
Yes.
Okay. So, I saw a tweet, and I don't want to. God, I almost feel like I'm picking on Triple H this week, so he writes a thing, you know, and it's not just whatever, you know, it's like, you know, we thank you for your contributions. I mean, it was more than that. It was just like, I wish I knew the exact words. Look it up so you can say, but it was more than that. And it reminded me of when Naylor, Rob Naylor got let go. Okay. Now Rob Naylor got let go and every freaking talent at NXT. I don't want to say every, because there's probably someone who didn't, but probably 2/3 of the talent in NXT, or 3/4. It seemed like everyone.
Are you talking about the one that he did like today?
Triple H today, yeah.
All right. Well, he said, at JR's Barbecue, thanks for being the voice of our attitude. Hashtag none better.
Oh, there it is. Okay. None better. All right. Okay. If there's none better, then why is he not there? If there's none better, why would you say that?
Well,
I mean, I agree.
Maybe at the end of the day, this wasn't Triple H's call, and he had no say, or at least not enough say.
He had a lot of he has a lot of say,
but maybe he didn't have enough say.
Did he have enough say to go to bat and say, "Okay, it's been a year. Can we bring him back?"
I don't know. Maybe he didn't.
I mean, he may not have. I just find, like, when it's, again, like, if it's wrestlers saying something, and, you know, it wasn't exactly like there were a lot of wrestlers. You know, when JR actually got fired, you remember how many wrestlers, like, tweeted about it? Like, none. But, it just was weird to me that, like, you go, none better. If there's none better, and you're the number two guy in the company, then why is he gone? And I was like, with Naylor, I mean, it was like, when all the wrestlers and everything tweeted about, you know, oh, we're sorry to see you go, blah, 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 blah. That was fine. You know, it's like, that's cool. It was really cool, actually. It's really cool. But Triple H did as well. And Triple H, you know, it's like, oh, man, we're sorry to see you go. And it's like, wait a minute. That's your department. You know what I mean? If this guy's so valuable and he works so hard and he's such a great employee and all that, and it's your department, and everybody doesn't want him to go, who the hell made the call? And why would the call be made?
I would presume Vince made the call.
Vince didn't make any call at NXT.
NXT, no. No.
Absolutely. Vince wouldn't even know who the guy is, most likely. Now, Jim Ross, yeah, that could be a Vince call. And, you know, ultimately it was a Vince call, although it was a call precipitated by Michelle Wilson, from what I understand, but I could be wrong, or could have been Stephanie. They were the two that were very, very upset, you know, that night of the thing that went, you know, the 2K
sure.
thing. So, you know, it was one of the two or both, you know, that you know, whether they riled Vince, who knows how it went down exactly. I mean, well, that's how it went down. But anyway, I just thought that, like, you know, it's just weird to me that if you, when you say none better, then, you know, I don't know. It's like, so why is he not there?
I just translate it like, at the end of the day, Hunter Hearst Helmsley thinks that Jim Ross, there are none better. But also at the end of the day, it's Vince McMahon's call, and he doesn't give a shit what anybody says. He doesn't want the guy there.
For developmental?
Well, I mean, I'm talking for the main roster.
Okay. Well, who's in charge of developmental?
Well, I mean, I understand Vince doesn't know anybody there, but he just may be saying he's not working for this company.
In developmental? He's not going to say that in developmental.
There's no chance.
What? There's a chance he might say that, but he doesn't even, you know, for developmental, I doubt he's going to go in there and overstep the guy in development for a developmental spot.
So you may be right, but I mean, that's the only thing I can come up with. Because I don't know, but I would think
you don't think he might be two-faced?
Well, he may be. That is possible. But I, mean,
it is wrestling.
I also think that Hunter, I think that Hunter has to know that there is a great, great value in Jim Ross, and whether you really like the guy or not. Listen, if I were running developmental, I would have a whole bunch of young guys attempting to learn commentary. But every now and then on a big show, I would put Jim Ross out there and I would have him call the main event and I would have everybody watch and see how it's done. Because that's what developmental is about. It's about getting people that really know what they're doing to go down there and teach the young guys how it's done while also giving the young guys an opportunity to actually do it. That's why I think it's kind of cool that they've sort of got the rotating announce teams here and there. I mean, it is important to groom these guys to be good announcers, but okay, you should have the guy out there every now and then where they sit back and they just go, huh, how about that?
But wait a minute. On the rotating announce team, okay, you're right. It's good. The only thing is that the only ones on those rotating announce teams that they're looking at for the future is the ones that are being carried that aren't any good, like Tom Phillips, okay, because I don't buy that Matt Bloom is going to be an announcer on the main roster.
No, nor is Regal.
And Regal, we know Regal isn't going to be, even though Regal's a better announcer than anyone they got. We know. So, you know, and Byron Saxton might be, and Alex Riley probably will be, you know, but, I don't know. And Alex Riley. It's funny because Alex Riley, and I think it's probably because of who his father is and everything, Alex Riley has certain good qualities as an announcer, but the more I see of him, and I liked him when he started as an announcer, and I think he's got great potential, the more I see him falling into a certain rut pattern, and I think that that's because of how you're taught. And I think that I think that's the problem. The problem is the way they teach these announcers, you get what you're teaching these guys, and it's not really working out well because they're learning to be programmed announcers as opposed to feeling it and you know, getting your own, you know, because, you know, a great announcer is one that has his own terminology and his own fingerprints and his own types of enthusiasm and his own catchphrases and all that. At least that's what I've gotten from, you know, great baseball announcers and football announcers and things like that. And in WWE, they don't really want that. They want robots, but robots make for really shitty announcers.
Yes, so, they do.
I know, but that's what they're training. So it's, you know, whatever.
You know, it's funny.
But the guy who's not a robot, they go, there's none better, but they don't want him around.
I don't know if this has anything to do with anything, but it really struck me. I was watching the first Saturday night's main event on the network, and the show opens, and Vince McMahon and Jesse Ventura are introducing the show. And I never noticed this before, but my God, did Vince McMahon in 1985 look just like Michael Cole does today? It was creepy. And I don't know if it's some sort of psychological deal. That's why he chose this guy to be his main announcer on the main show. But I never noticed it before, but I sure noticed it when I watched that back.
Wow, that's scary. Yeah. Well, there's another one. Jesse Ventura was a very successful wrestling announcer until, you know, he wasn't, you know, in WCW. I mean, I mean, Jesse never prepared. I mean, there's a lot of stuff about Jesse that wasn't good, but but he had a fantastic delivery. Pretty damn good wit. But, you know, you couldn't tell Jesse anything because he knew everything, even though he didn't, he thought he did. But the point is that he was very successful being like that. He was his own person. Anyone who copies Jesse Ventura is going to be the complete shits, but Jesse Ventura was great. They would never let anyone be a Jesse Ventura now.
Especially now.
You know, but the whole thing is like, but that was like, they wouldn't let anyone be a Jim Ross now. Yet, if you ask people who their favorite announcers were, they would probably say Jim Ross, Jesse Ventura, and maybe Bobby Heenan. And God knows they're not going to let anyone be a Bobby Heenan now. No, I mean, no one could because no one's that funny. But even if someone was that funny, they wouldn't, you know, you know what I mean? They wouldn't let him be that funny. I mean, look, Lawler used to be funny. He ain't anymore.
He has moments, but for the most part.
He has moments. Yeah, he has moments every now and then. But when Lawler was doing the thing 15 years ago, I mean, Lawler was, I mean, he used to crack me up. Now, I mean, of course, he probably cared a lot more than he cares now, too. But, I mean, Lawler now, it's like, you know, he's just, you know, he feels like a third wheel that's just kind of there because, you know, they haven't gotten rid of him. And JBL's running over everyone all the time. He's good, but he's not particularly funny. And I don't know. He's not Jesse Ventura either.
All right, everybody. We're going to wrap it up. We've got a lot of stuff up on the front page right now. New Observer is up there. The new back issue, I think, is up on the front page still as well. And we got some shows coming up over the next couple of days, including Bret Hart on Friday. So you can look forward to that. And
Matt Brown and Robbie Lawler is Saturday night in San Jose.
That's right. Dave is going to be there. Yeah. So, we'll talk about that this weekend.
That might be that in theory could be the fight of the year.
Well, I want everyone to know that the last Matt Brown fight, I put it up on the front page. It is a tremendous fight. If you have not seen it, you should really go up there and check it out. It is up there in the video section. Matt Brown, Eric Silva. Make sure you watch that fight. It was awesome. And Matt Brown, I hope like everyone in the world watched that fight because they certainly didn't watch it on television. So go up there and watch it on our website here, and it'll get you excited. You'll think Matt Brown is a star when it's over, which is something they're desperately needing right now. So check that out. And yeah, should be a fun show Saturday. So we're going to wrap it up, everybody. Saturday, we'll be back, and a lot more coming up. So check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.